supervisors will convene. Supervisor Howe, could you lead us in the flag, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chaplain Bradley, good to have you here today.
Good to be here.
Thank you for being here.
All right, let's pray together. Father, it's our joy to be here today. We're truly grateful for the blessings of life and the activities of a full summer, and people participating in all kinds of things. But there's always the need to come together as government to discuss the issues, to provide for the people who live in our county. We're truly grateful for all those who serve and have served faithfully, for our firefighters and other first responders, or the problems we've had with fires in our county. And God, you've taken care of things, and we're grateful for that, and we express that gratitude today. For all of the employees, just continue to encourage them in their work, and we just give you thanks for them. For our Board of Supervisors, decisions that need to be made, Father, that they would consider wisely which direction to go, that input from the public is important for understanding. And we're grateful that we participate in a government that lets us speak up. And so we give you thanks for where we live and your blessings in our life. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Right. The board will be convening today as the Board of Supervisors only, and we have to do the rest. Let's do a roll call. Supervisor Howe?
Present.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Here.
Supervisor Chris?
Present.
Supervisor Ogren?
Present.
And Supervisor Cobb?
Here.
Thank you much.
Counselor, is there any urgency items to be put on the agenda? No? Just checking. Okay, we're item four, presentations from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. And so with that, if you haven't filled out a blue card, they're over here on the end of the table, and you can we'll get it up here, and we'll call on you. Those of you online, I'm going in-house first, and then we'll go online. Okay? So first one is I have Don Marie Autry. Good morning.
Good morning. Don Marie Autry. I came across this 10-year plan that was written by you all, maybe not all of you, but by the board, along with behavioral health and other organizations to get the crossroads. And I would hate to think that now that the crossroads here, that you have abandoned this plan. In this plan, it talks about emergency shelters and services, and day center services, laundry, shower, program services, case management are all in there, pretty much mandatory. And we had the shower truck. It was bringing people jobs because they were actually able to shower, have clean clothes, work a good job. You take away the showers, and I don't know how many of them have lost their jobs. This is not okay. And again, in order to get the crossroads, we have this, and what now we have crossroads, so this just goes in the garbage. I would hate to think that that is the case. And I would just beg you to please, you know, you haven't helped really with the shelters at all, as far as I can see. So could you please bring back the truck, the shower truck and the laundry truck until we can get our shelters open and they can actually use those amenities? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anyone else in-house? Seeing none, I have one that's designated for. Oh, okay.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Luther Finley. I'm a community service director of the Wairika Seventh-day Adventist Church. And Tuesday evenings, we prepare anywhere from 70 to 90 meals and provide them to the homeless. We take them out to where they're at, you know, on the hill, along the Greenway, Walmart, Ladies. And one of my big burdens was showers for them. And the Northern California Conference of Seventh-day Adventists has a shower trailer, but it doesn't have like a containment for the gray water, or doesn't have a supply for fresh water. And so not really an option to bring it up, and you can't just dump the gray water in the gutter, you know, go to the... So the shelter, I mean, the showers is like a answer to prayer, really. Brings so much dignity, and I was an alcoholic and a drug addict for 20 years. I've been clean and sober for over 30 years now, but it was just from compassion and love and prayers, you know, that by the grace of God, I'd be up on the hill myself or I'd be dead. And so the showers are such a great blessing to our neighbors and friends, you know, that are unhoused. And I just would really like to see them come back. And from what I understand, the funds for the showers then come from the general fund. It's a grant program. And so it's not like draining any resources from the county. So anyways, I'm strongly in favor. I've been there at the shower truck. We hand out feminine hygiene products and snacks and toothbrushes and toothpaste and hairbrushes. And, you know, I you know their names, look them in the eye, and give them hugs. And, you know, they're our fellow human beings, and they deserve compassion and love. And,
can I get the spelling of your last name?
F-I-N-D-L-E-Y.
L-E-Y. Thank you.
And if you could fill out one of those blue cards and just hand it over.
May I say something?
Yeah.
I wasn't going to
just
speak.
Fill out one of the blue cards after. You can do it after.
Okay. I wasn't going to speak at all because he's...
What's your name?
I'm Darlene Brenner. I'm still a Brenner. I was married to Urs Brenner. Some of you knew him. He was Dr. Brenner. And I'm married now to Luther. I found him to be the kindest, nicest, most wonderful man. The Wheelers introduced me to him, Deanna Wheeler and her family. And they knew him before. And he says, I think you make a good match for you, Darlene, because I was miserable. And what I can say now is truthful. I really didn't want to go working with the homeless. And then because he's so involved in it, guess where I am? I'm involved in it too, and I'm there every week. We at our church, Nelson's, others, they all come. We make sandwiches, and we all bring food. We buy food. We put it together. We make, how many meals do we make every week? About 70 to 90 meals. And we bring them up, and Steve Nelson helps us. I'm mentioning him because you know him. And there's many other people that are involved in this. And we bring them to the hill to feed the people. We go down to where the showers, where they have the showers. And we meet other people that are standing there that wouldn't have gotten a meal otherwise. And we end up with, never do we end up with any extra meals. There's so many people to take care of. So I don't know what they would do without, I mean, I'm really proud of what we do. I don't know what the city would do if we decided to quit. I don't see us doing that. But I thought I better get my 2 cents worth here. Thank you for listening.
Melissa Browning. And if you wouldn't mind just filling out one of those over there.
Brenner.
B-R-Y-N-E-R.
No, I've got someone else behind you.
Sorry.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Melissa Browning. I am one of the people who live on the Hill of House from Behavioral Health. I am like secondary on the board for the Homeless Coalition Board. I get the meals that she was talking about, and they're really good. They're just like you said, they stop doing it, there'd be a lot of people that were really hungry. But the showers and the laundry, all I can really say is the homeless population was way better off when it was going on. They kind of have lost hope in the fact that, like, Rodrigo even cares about anything about them at all, honestly, from what I've heard. I talk about it extensively with just about everybody on the Hill. I know everybody, I'm friends with everybody there. And as far as what we see is we think that Rodrigo has given up on us, is trying to give us a bus ticket. I was born here. I was born in the old hospital, the Walter office. Now we watched the EBT video. That was the room I was born in. I shouldn't have to go to a different town to get services and stuff. I don't think. There's some people out there, most people think it's just a choice. For some people, it's a matter of, just the way life goes, and it's one thing after another, and, you end up there. But there's people like me who are wanting that hand up, and I have tried so many different ways to get different services here and keep getting denied. And the thing is the showers were just a simplicity. It's more of a human thing, just to be able to have, it's only one shower, every week or every 2 weeks, but to be able just to have a shower and some clean clothes, it was a sense of normalcy that I seen, people that I have never seen wear clean clothes was wearing clean clothes. I'm serious. And the same pair of clothes more than once. That's something you don't really see out here, is somebody wears the same thing twice because they just find new clothes, because it's hard to wash them and stuff like that. So it's hard to see somebody keep the same pair of clothes. So, it kind of would help cut down the trash and stuff too. And because, people would be wearing the same set of clothes, for a week and stuff, instead of having piles and piles of clothes. I noticed the piles of clothes were starting to diminish up there and stuff. But it's just, it's not really human, the first couple times I came out of the shower, I literally said, they were like, "How do you feel?" I said, "I feel like I'm human again." Because when you go in, you don't feel like you're human. And it seemed like such a simple thing, to be able, since it's such a simple service, to be able to provide that. It's not like we're entitled to it, but, there is government funding and stuff for it, so as the population on the Hill, we ask that you bring it back, as long as it doesn't affect the city or whatever. We would like to see these showers come back.
Thank you. Anne Steinbring, I think it is. Good morning.
I'll be really fast. I just think we need to hurry up a little bit more than what she's talking about.
We need your name for the record.
Anne Steinbrink.
Thank you.
I've been driving around this town, and I've been here since I was a little, kind of like she said. And she's a nice girl. I've known her for since she was little. Some of the people on the Hills are really bullies, and it is really hard to live around. But what I think we need to do as a town, there's a lot of abandoned buildings and we have a lot of hotel rooms here that are just sitting there for trafficking and drug use and overnight spendings and whatnot. But I think if we actually took maybe a couple of our hotel rooms around here and opened them up to where we could let the homeless kind of go, as we, so they have something, not just a shower. I know it seems like giving them something for free, but actually it might not be that way. It might be to where you might have a little bit more control, and I know that sounds mean, but then they might get, like she said, maybe a hand up out of it, or whatever. Or maybe you'll find, you know, whoever is being bad, then they'll go to jail, and the other people might get help. But either way, I think we need to do a little bit more. We need to use the abandoned buildings we're using. These people should not be stuck outside just because they're poor. I think we have a real epidemic right now, and it is not blacks and white anymore. It's now poor and rich. And the poor people are getting treated exactly how the blacks used to get treated. And it's pretty bad. And I hate to say that in a whatever way, but that's what's going on. Anyways, long story short, I think we need to help with the hotel rooms and get a little bit more control around here. And put them to use. And then also I want to let you guys know there's also an epidemic right now with some things going into things at hotels where they've been watching women. I used to stay at hotels a little bit around here because I like to get out of my house and I like swimming and this and that. But one time I was staying at a hotel and these little, when you, I don't know, they're like those little things that you have, like a, you know, like a fan. And when you looked up, there was this blue light. And then it just so happened, one of the guys were sitting out there watching out the window. And it became a little bit more than that, but I'm not going to say it in here. But the thing is, we need to do a little bit more because girls are becoming unsafe. There's stuff going on that you guys don't know about with the hotels, and I think it would help you more just to take control. And then the other thing is, with the truck about the food, I believe the best thing for us to do is go back to what we used to do when I was five. There was a place you could go when I was five. It was called the Soup Kitchen. They would put together dinners, which I know, but you gotta realize all these people are doing the work anyways. They're bringing the food to them anyways with the truck or whatever it is, and they have to prepare the meals, they have to do all the work. When a soup kitchen, they would still have to do that, but more as a family. They'd have one kitchen, the people could cook, and then the people that are out there have their rights to come down and eat as a family. I mean, when I was a kid, it would be nice. I would go in there as a kid, my parents would sit down with all the other homeless people and everything. And the kid, you know, as a kid, I was able to get apple juice, glass of milk, get a free meal, play outside with my friends as they were making the dinner, things like that. So I would just say that I think we need to do a little bit more than just the truck and the shower. I mean, it's a great idea, but I think we could be taking a whole lot more control. And I think...
I need you to wrap up, please.
Yeah, thank you. But that's all I want to say. I think the soup kitchen might be better, and maybe a couple times a week get people to help, because then they could come down as a family and get all that food. And then we used to leave clothes. They used to leave clothes on a table, and you could just go through them, the people that would come in, whatever you wanted to take. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else in-house? On an item or?
Battery 100%.
You want public comment now? Is that correct, Louise?
Should we wait till we get to the item? Or
you can wait. Gym? You can wait to the item as well.
I would rather do
okay,
that.
That's fine.
And over here, too.
Yeah, we'll go
over
online.
I think it was Sheila. Did you want to speak as well?
I think I'll wait
sorry.
Till we get to the item.
Okay.
Sorry. Didn't see that.
That's
okay. Okay. Online?
Caller ending in 1969 is returned to speak.
Good morning.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. My name is Harry Mazingo. I've lived in Siskiyou County for 30 years, and I currently live in District 3. I've lived there for 17. I'm currently a self-employed real estate broker and a local business owner for the last 12 years. I'd really like to encourage the Board of Supervisors, as well as my District 3 representative, to support the shower and laundry trust for the homeless. It's been stated in the staff report the successfulness of those trucks in being able to help those homeless people on the hill feel healthier and increasing their dignity and confidence in order to go about trying to get jobs or also housing. And I think it's amazing that the testament that we just heard of someone who actually is a beneficiary of those services. How powerful is that to be able to hear from somebody who can also attest to the fact that they just, like, it makes a world of difference to be able to just take a shower and wash your clothes We take it for granted, and I don't think we should, and I really would encourage all the Board of Supervisors, including my representative, to have a vote of confidence and bring back the shower truck and the shower and laundry truck for those people that need it and can desperately be helped by it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next online.
Tim Stearns, it's your turn to speak.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Tim Stearns from Mount Shasta. I'm a lawyer in Mount Shasta. I've been on the Mount Shasta City Council for just about 24 years now. I am also speaking in support of bringing back the shower and laundry trucks. It is shown to be an effective step in returning people back to society. Not only has it been helpful in Siskiyou County, but it's been shown effective elsewhere. I first got interested in this some years ago when we had complaints of people walking down the street in Mount Shasta in dirty clothes and smelling. At that time, we were considering getting shower trucks for Mount Shasta, or a shower truck for Mount Shasta, so I was delighted to see that the county had implemented that program some years later at this current time. So I too am in support of this program and ask you to vote in favor of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else online?
Showing no others online.
Okay, last call for in-house before we move on. Okay, we'll go to consent agenda, item 5, A through H.
Oh, A and C.
Okay.
Apple and cat?
Yep, yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
And I'd like to pull F as in Frank.
Okay.
I was going to pull A as well. I'm not sure. We'll go to the address and then we'll come up and talk about the things that are there. So I'm looking for action on the balance of the consent agenda.
Okay, Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Chris?
I'll be an aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsav?
Aye. So on item A, Supervisor Howe, I was going to pull that just to hold it. We have a closed session coming up, and I prefer to bring that up after that session.
I just needed to recuse myself.
Okay.
Because of my wife.
Okay. Okay. So with that, if council agrees, I'd just like to hold that item A, 5A, until after close.
Yes, agreeable. Okay.
Thank you. Item C, Supervisor Howe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a lot of questions.
Okay.
On this item. Forgive me for that. I did a pretty deep dive on the base camp stuff that was done in November and had some questions on that and how it relates to this particular project. When the bridge services targeted persons with serious behavioral health conditions, is that the same as this project?
So Sarah Collard, Health and Human Services. So this project, is specifically for CareCourt. I've spoken here a little bit about CareCourt, which we have to implement by December 1st. So this project, the BHBH funding was for counties to develop housing for that population. So this project prioritizes that population. And yes, CareCourt participants are individuals with certain behavioral health disorders who are not engaged in treatment.
Okay, and in that, it said we had a due date for the CareCourt to be established by June 30th, I believe. And
Care Court, it needs to be implemented by December 1st, and this project has to be up and going by November 30th.
So wasn't one supposed to proceed the other?
So this project...
I'm looking at the November material that was submitted, and the Care Court had to be in place before someone could be moved into this facility?
Yes, so Care Court, we need to implement by December 1st, this coming December 2024. There was a cohort one county, so I think seven counties were in the first cohort for implementation of Care Court, and then I think LA jumped on later. So several counties have implemented already, but the balance need to be implemented by December 1st.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
I believe in the first round, the state funded additional money for that, if I'm not mistaken.
The cohort one counties received quite a bit of funding. We've received a little bit of funding for startup costs, and it was $250,000 for startup.
I think Tuolumne County was the only rural county that stepped
and
in.
And Glenn was the other small county in the first cohort. But yes, you're correct. The remainder of the counties were very large or medium-sized counties.
Sure, thanks. What I'm trying to do here is I'm trying in my own mind trying to figure out what the linkage is to what we did in November. You know, because the staff report for this item refers to what we approved back in November. And what we approved then was 175 beds, was the understanding there. And then we talked about a tiny home village. We didn't talk about a pallet village at that time.
Madeline Bryan, Housing Coordinator, Health and Human Services. So the Behavioral Health Bridge Housing Project was approved in November. The grant that we wrote to develop the tiny home village. The pallet shelter is a tiny home village. The pallet is the name of a company that creates tiny home structures.
I looked at their webpage. No, okay. That's not quite what I had in mind when we were talking about the tiny homes, because we deal with tiny homes all the time in here. That was my question, but now we're only looking at 15?
That's correct.
As opposed to the 175, which was the need back then?
We never wrote the grant for 175 beds.
That's what's in the staff report in November.
175 beds?
Yeah.
For the bridge housing project. Are you sure that you are referencing the Behavioral Health Bridge Housing grants?
I just read it this morning.
And did you read our application, or did you read the state's notice of funding availability, or I'm just trying to...
I read what was submitted to this board as the intent for what we were dealing with at the time, and it doesn't matter a whole lot about the numbers. What matters about the numbers to me is 15 sufficient to address the issue we have?
So, if I may, we did originally propose a larger number of beds. We proposed to develop 20 beds. We determined that we could purchase 15 structures and that five of them would be double beds. Unfortunately, the company changed the model and they no longer offered that product. But the property that we have available and the funding that we had available only allowed us to develop 15 sleeping structures.
Back in November, we also talked about pretty much an inpatient care kind of a thing where you'd have a resident supervisor that was going to provide some kind of care services or supervision. Is that the case with this proposal as well or not?
So we issued an RFP and had four respondents and selected a provider, Northern Valley Catholic. Northern Valley Catholic Social Services, so they will be the on-site entity that will administer the programs and provide services there.
Because that was key to my support back in November, was the supervision of know, behavior issues.
Yes.
And drug and subsistence.
Yes.
Issues. When I looked up the location, is that private or public land?
It's city property, and they are leasing it to us.
Okay.
They will be leasing it to us for $1 a year.
Okay. Any issues with building code? Because I honestly, I can't get somebody through the tiny home process on a piece of private land in this county.
If I may, these tiny homes are interim housing, they're not permanent housing, so there could be differences that apply in that scenario, and it's also emergency housing. The grant only allowed us to provide interim housing. We weren't allowed to use it for any permanent housing projects. And the city has been working really closely with us. As you know, our expertise is in services. It's not an infrastructure. So they've been guiding us through that process, and they've handled a lot of that review on their side.
Okay. And what's the plan for maintenance of these, as well as what's their longevity and what happens when they need their usefulness?
The structures are supposed to last 15 to 20 years. I have to admit I don't have a plan for disposing of them in 15 to 20 years, but I think it also depends on, you know, what the situation is in regards to homelessness at that time.
Okay, is the contractor providing maintenance and sanitary and all the rest of it?
Yes, in our RFP we required them to oversee the maintenance and cleanliness of the site.
So you look at the cost factor. I mean, that's what alarms, at least myself. Is there a better way? I know this is in play. I'm just asking the question. Have we looked at different alternatives to be able to spend down dollars that broaden the scope of being able to house more? You have, you've heard, we have empty motel rooms. I know we've leased whole complexes of motels to address some of this. What's different that this is going to provide that we can't find locally already?
Currently the hotels are charging us approximately $2,200 a month for a hotel room, and there are lots of issues with that, right? We have been and we continue to house people in hotels, both in social services programs and in behavioral health programs. And as you know, right, hotels don't have cooking, the ability to cook in them. There's not a lot of oversight there. And so it's been a great resource, and it's challenging on many levels. So then we end up housing families there, and it's challenging.
And
so
what won't be challenging with the pallet housing?
I think that this will be challenging. I think, you know, by definition, care court participants are the most challenging population that we serve. And so I think having an on-site provider that has years of experience with this population will make this, I don't know that it'll make it less challenging, but we're better able to meet those challenges. I think we have the ability to, you know, there's a position in this grant in addition that will help people sort of be in the housing and find, you know, move through, because it's interim housing, move into longer term placements. So I think we just have more ability to support this housing. Also, we've spoken numerous times with the community, the unhoused community, and they've identified this as their preferred housing type, and so we are, you know, responsive to that constituency as well. So I think we don't know. It's a pilot project from our perspective, so it's our intention has been to create as many different types of housing as we have the ability to do with the funding that we have available, in order to sort of increase our chances of success, right? Because everybody has their own individual housing preference, and so if we have the ability to house people in Crossroads, and we have the ability to house people in a palace shelter. We have, you know, we continue to use hotel rooms, and so we, and base camp will also be available. So we continue to try and sort of build out the resource and the diversity of the resource.
Yeah, and I will just add that while there, you know, if, while the hotels and motels have their advantages, the population felt that they're also in an environment that's not well controlled, especially if they're working on reducing their barriers to housing, which could be mental health barriers, substance use disorder barriers, working, you know, intensely with staff on housing searches and documentation. So the pallet shelter, ideally, it's a more controlled environment, right? It's only the people who are in the program working with staff. It's not just open to anyone to come visit, to create an environment that their clients don't feel like they can successfully address their barriers in. Also, the grant is only for 3 years, so we hesitate to create too large of a project that we have to get. We have, you know, a very short time period to get up and running, contractually obligated to have it up and running within a year, and that we would, if successful, have to find ways to continue sustainably or to dismantle if not. So those were some of the considerations about keeping this a pilot project. That being said, if we are a year into operating this program and it turns out that operating it is much cheaper than other services we've paid for, like motels, we did put in an RFP that we might ask the operator to also assist with motel vouchers or another kind of assistance. So we could, at that point, we could go to the granting agency and seek to expand our bed capacity in that way. So that would be an option that we would have to get their approval to do that, though.
So when you say it's 3 years, what does that mean?
The grant has to be extended by June 30th.
For the housing itself or for staffing as well?
The funding has to be extended by June 30th.
Understood, but is it for housing specifically, or is it for staffing?
The grant is for both, yes.
So what happens at the end of 3 years when the grant goes away, when this board has a standing policy of when the grant goes away, the job goes away?
We have been proactive in securing funding that's ongoing. So PLHA funding is a source of housing funds that is ongoing. Madeline did an amazing job of working with the cities, and the majority, all of the jurisdictions with the exception of one, have delegated funding to us. We intend to, it's a 5-year cycle for those funds. We intend to start working on that again, and it's our goal, if this project is successful, to use some of that funding to sustain the project. There's also other funding. HPAP is another source of funding that's out there. So there continues to be housing funds that are available to us. And as you know, I think the governor is very invested in this care court idea. So, and every county is standing up some kind of housing project, because care court is, housing is a sort of an essential component of that program, and counties face sanctions if they're not sort of fulfilling the mandate. And so I don't anticipate that funding.
I just want for clarification and on the record that when the grant goes away, the job goes away.
If I may add something, so the majority of the staffing will be by our contractor, who we selected to operate the shelter, and we were clear in our RFP about that expenditure deadline, so we were upfront. That is what the grant is, that's the terms, and so it won't impact county staffing directly, but the staffing of the operator.
The one position, and that position will be tied to the length of the grant.
Yes.
As long as we understand that.
Yes,
I mean, yes.
Too often we get ourselves in the trap where we take a grant, and it's not free money. I don't care what anybody says about it. It's not free money. We always, have in the past, have gotten saddled with a position that has been grant-funded that the general fund has to pick up when we don't have that kind of funding. So as long as we're clear with that, that's great.
Absolutely.
With regard to water and sewer, who's providing that, and is there any cost?
We're working with the city on developing the plan for that. They are assisting us with doing the site preparation. I don't know exactly what the cost will be for those services, but it will be in the operator's budget to fulfill that cost. Most of the funding is being passed through to the operator.
So the sewer and water will be through this grant as well?
Yes.
Or is there
no sewer?
Yes.
Is there no
to
sewer
pay the
and
bill,
water?
No. There are sewer and water to the shower facilities and the restroom facilities, and yes, that is within the operator's budget to pay the city for the cost of the water and the sewer.
So what's the skin in the game from the city? Because I know I was at the city council meeting here last week, heard a wide spectrum of this issue, but so far I see a lot of county dollars going towards this, and I want to know what part the city's playing in it.
Thank you for that question. The city has been a fantastic partner throughout this process. For one, they've provided the land at, I think we can all agree, $1 a year is not like a substantial reimbursement to them.
Okay.
So that greatly reduces our cost of operating the program. Additionally, they actually commissioned the engineered drawings and paid for those for the project. And the Public Works Department is doing the majority of the site preparation for the project.
So I'll be most interested in their reduction of cost in water and sewer as well. And then lastly, is the oversight or whoever is going to be on site for this, is it 24/7 or is it 5 days a week, 8 hours a day?
It's 24/7.
Thank you. Supervisor Chris.
No, thanks, Mr. Chair. The initial cost were, thank you. The initial costs were a concern as well when I was looking at those things, but when you look at the document and break down the heavy load bathrooms and community rooms and those sorts of things, I see have a cost to it. So that was a concern when I was looking at it, was the cost. You always want to do things that's cost efficient wise. But seeing the breakdown, I can see why home, heater, those sorts of factors are nice. For the care court, what I like about this is it puts it in a controlled setting, which you have to have a controlled setting for substance abuse, mental health care. And then one thing, it's not in the staff report, but so I know you won't have the numbers right now, is this is the clientele that would end up in jail. This is the clientele that rotates through the jail system off and on, taking it with the state of California, closing state prisons. Those folks are being sent back to county jails. More violent, dangerous folks. So this is the folks that can be healthy out on the street with some assistance to kind of be in the social setting. Otherwise, they'd be taking up the jail bed space for pedophiles and those sorts of factors there. So I know you don't have those numbers, but I know there is a cost savings with these not taking up jail space, being able to hold more serious accountable for their offenses, and then at least, I'll say at least, violent. And this system so they can have treatment, be stabilized, and not go through a cycle of jail back and forth.
Yes, we don't have a cost saving for this specific program. There have been many studies done about the cost savings of providing housing versus all the emergency services that unhoused folks use. So those kinds of studies are available, and I could look into if you wanted to learn more about that. In terms of the price of these palace shelters, the grant did have some parameters. For example, we had to be no more than $75,000 per bed. We are well below that number. We are, I believe, under $30,000 per bed for that cost, and including some of the site preparation that we have to pay for. So in terms of the parameters the state gave us were actually conservative compared to their expectations, if that makes sense.
The answer fully.
Is there anything?
I've spent a lot of time with you working on numerous projects to try to bring housing to this county and to this city, as well as, you all know, the shower trailers. I'm really grateful for all of the work that you've put into this. We're never going to solve this problem. No matter what we do, this is way bigger than us. It started before us. It will continue. all we can do is our very best to try to figure out how to come up with the projects and the programs to support what our government keeps throwing at us. That's one of the biggest problems, is we're trying to manage things that are way bigger than what we have the capacity to do. So here we are, faced with all of this, and we have to try to figure it out. And hopefully you have the support that you need. This program is a pilot. We're going to try to figure out how to make that happen. One of the questions I still have is, does behavioral health, will you have people to go to this facility and actually give support to those people that will be there? That's one question I don't think has been asked yet.
So yes, we do. Care Corps then requires that we engage people in treatment. So these are people who have been treatment resistant. So that process requires us to engage people. This grant includes a housing navigator, which is the position that will, you know, live within 3 years of the grant. So we have someone who will focus specifically on getting these clients into housing and other behavioral health clients into long-term housing. And then each of these clients will have, you know, a therapist and a case manager who's the Care Corps case manager. Given that, you know, Care Corps has very narrow diagnostic criteria. So it's possible that, I mean, this is the first priority housing for Care Corps, but it's possible people without, you know, who aren't engaged in Care Corps will be there as well. And they will be full service partners who are also connected to a case manager. In addition, we have the, you know, the layer of NDCSS who will have staff there to, you know, manage the site and work with the clients. So these clients will have more services, you know, sort of on a day-to-day basis than the majority of the clients that are engaged in services, just because of that additional provider.
So I think that's really good to know that our public knows that these people will be supervised and counseled and helped, that they're not just left there to languish, left there to be on their own. I think that's an important piece to this. So we have employees, we have behavioral health staff up at Crossroads, we have behavioral health staff at the pallet shelters, whatever we decide to call it, and then we'll have staff also at base camp, so, or NBCSS staff. So we have really great opportunities for people to be helped and to be able to start giving back to our community, which is what this is all about. Not just handing things out to people, not entitling people to anything, but actually giving them the help they need to turn around and give back and to become successful. And I think that's the thing we really need to start focusing on, and making sure that our community understands that. We're not just handing things out to people, giving them opportunity. I'll stop there.
Supervisor Howe?
I have a couple more. I'm still trying to sort out what we did in November in my own mind. We had a umbrella contract, if you will, for a whole lot of things in that decision, for a price tag of $2.4 million in a grant. Is any of this money for this program coming out of what we approved in November, or is this a separate?
This is not a separate. This funding is directly tied to that project, and it is from that grant.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks.
And I think I may have figured out the misunderstanding with the numbers.
Uh-huh.
So we were asked to report projections in many different units, including the numbers we expected to serve of households, and in addition to the units and buildings. So I think that may be where the confusion was derived from, because we do expect to serve more than 15 people over the course of the grant.
I hope so.
I do too.
Yeah. When we approved that back in November, there's a quarterly report from that contractor that is supposed to be provided. I don't know if you're getting that. I'm not seeing it at my level. I'd sure like to see that.
The quarterly report is what we provide to the grantee agency.
Okay.
We're happy to provide
it. And we can share that with you as well.
I appreciate that.
It's pretty boring at this point since the project hasn't started. But
so far, it's 0-0-0.
Yeah, I can be a pretty boring guy.
We're happy to share.
I don't know how to articulate this. I'm not trying to come across as an overhear, but I am very concerned with costs, and I'll tell you why. It's not this project. I look at everything about the same. I have great empathy for those who are struggling and trying to get them back on their feet. You know, I've participated myself in countless programs to help youth and disadvantaged people do that throughout my life. My greatest concern, and it doesn't matter whether it's this program or in my personal contributions to nonprofits or whatever that I make, I want to know what their overhead cost is, because I am not at all interested in making some people rich over using disadvantaged people as their means of accumulating wealth and gouging the government just because it's grant money. That's why I scrutinize these costs the way I do. It has nothing to do with the program, truthfully. It has to do with the delivery and the efficiency of the operators. And quite frankly, we don't get competitive bids. So that's even a greater concern to me.
I will say receiving 3 bids for this kind of project is more than we ever have before.
All of our grants are also capped with regard to administrative fees. And you may remember off the top of your head what the cap is for this grant, but we can certainly get you that information.
Yeah.
But each grant that we administer has a cap. And so...
Yeah, so the administrative cap for this grant is 10%, and the county, we actually may use even less than that 10%. You know, the 10% is the cap. If we can reduce administrative costs more, the granting agency is always happy to see that.
Yeah, I'm not so much concerned about our administration. I'm concerned about the
contractors
themselves and how much is actually going into their bank account versus how much is cost to actually provide the service. And when I look at this particular thing, like almost $32,000 per unit, I know there's a lot of other things associated with that, but that's why I bring this up. And yeah, to me, it's if it were more efficient, I could serve more people. That's the way I look at it.
I totally agree. Sometimes our hands are tied. One thing I haven't mentioned yet was that we had a cap on infrastructure. So 75% of the funding was required to go to operations. So not only did we have to stay below that cost per bed, but we also had that total layer. It had to be 25% for anything outside of that 75% for operations. So that was a very small number, and without the city's support, we probably wouldn't be able to develop even 15.
And our only other option in that case would be the hotels, and as I said, it's incredibly expensive to house people there.
In terms of our expectations for cost, I will say that most of the counties expect the CARE Act participants to be to require more costly services than some populations who are working on fewer challenges.
Okay. I'm not going to belabor this anymore. For me, it's still a cost issue, but it is the program I've been looking for quite some time from the standpoint of actually caring for people and providing the need that they actually need to get stabilized in their life.
I think everything that's been asked is satisfied to my satisfaction questions. Just a minute. So I'm hoping through this dialogue that staff gets the idea that it's not about the program, it's about how it's implemented and the cost overrun. Now, I know that the city of Yreka, through now the order of the governor having to clean up some of these encampments, the fear was that I heard Tuesday night is that there's nowhere for them to go. Evidently, the shelter isn't ready, and this isn't ready. And so I'm trying to figure out, even though everybody's been meeting and working together, how come there hasn't been, I guess, a smoother transition to where there isn't a gap here? How did the ball get dropped? Because there looks like this isn't going to be in place until November, if that.
So this project in particular is on a very short timeline. Mm-hmm. So I forgot when the NOFA came out, but we've had a year really to develop this project. And you know, Crossroads is open. We've moved eight people into the No Place Like Home unit.
Okay.
That was delayed due to supply chain issues with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
The shelter has renovation of the building has been more challenging than we anticipated, and I will take responsibility for that. I think, as you know, I'm a psychologist. Housing is not what I do, but we've been sort of forced down this road, so we are working and learning, and I know that NBCSS is working as hard as they can to get that up and going. We didn't anticipate the governor's or executive order, nor the city, you know, so we, yes, there is this gap, but it wasn't an intent, you know, we weren't.
I'm not saying it was intentional. I understand that. I'm just trying to put the pieces together.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of money here.
Yes.
I mean, really, this is approved and others approved, as well as the liaison that we provided to the city of Yreka. There's over $1 million going specifically to this type of program.
Yes.
And so my last question to you will be, have you hired sufficient staff to offset the other residents in the county that come for services, or has staffing moved strictly to this type of program? There's other people that are not homeless that require your services. What's
yes.
the balance?
So NBCSS is working on the two projects, right? So we have hired them to take on some of that responsibility. The people that we are serving in these projects, by and large, well, by definition, right, are individuals we would be serving otherwise. It's easier for us to serve them when they're in housing because we don't spend a lot of time trekking around under bridges trying to figure out where they are, right? So
okay. It
is the population we would serve anyway. We have the position in the grant for Housing Navigator. Our case managers spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out how to get people into housing. And so, I mean, from a treatment perspective, one of the greatest challenges with housing being sort of dumped in the lap of behavioral health is that it really interferes with people with treatment, right? People come into us for housing now, and that's really not what we're set up to do.
Right.
So sort of trying to differentiate, we're looking for a new building, and we're moving social services and behavioral health housing staff into that building to sort of separate that out so that the treatment providers can provide treatment and the housing staff can help people try to figure out how.
So the balance is what, 50-50, 75-25? What's, I mean, because the staffing hasn't apparently changed with these programmings. It's just the grant dollars that are going out to contract for the
There's
program.
That position. There's Madeline's position and another, Joanne, who's
mm-hmm.
here today.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a housing coordinator and an analyst that work with both agencies, both social services and behavioral health.
So are non-homeless residents of Siskiyou County able to access treatment that they
have. Yes, they are receiving the same level of services that they always have.
Okay. And there's a requirement for anyone housing in Crossroads or the pallet housing. Is there some responsibility or on their part with regard to maintaining what facility they'll be living in?
Yes. In Crossroads, each tenant has a lease with the landlord, and they're responsible to the to that lease and the rules of the facility. And in the pallet shelter, yes, people will be expected to maintain their space, and the CSS will work with them on that.
Okay, thank you.
And an important part of the services is life skill building. So residents of Crossroads, they're actually going to have staff teach them, if that's what they need, how to maintain a unit, how to cook their meals. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
With your item, do you want to do anything further? Because now we're back to action.
I don't want to recommend, but I won't stay.
Okay.
We appreciate that.
I have one public comment on this item. Come on up.
I just wanted to say what they were thinking. I think that maybe
the ma'am, your name for the record?
Oh, Ann Steinberg.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if they're going to have cameras. You know, I heard a lot of talk about how somebody's going to be supervising all these things, but you know how I feel about that is, well, like I said, I was a child in this town. I went through foster care. I've done all that, so I kind of know what I'm talking about. And just to make it fast, when I was little, I kind of said something about my parents, and I was taken away really fast. And, you know, what's really sad about that is I was a child, and I said something, and it got them in trouble. And next thing you know, well, we were taken away and we weren't allowed to spend time with our parents correctly. And, you know, you move on out of that. But the sad part about that was is that I was a kid, and long story short, the courts did what they thought was best, which was took us away. But then if there would have been cameras, is how I feel, maybe the courts could have done a better job at helping us, and maybe we could have got the appropriate time with our parents, even though they needed to be split up. But they were still good parents, and we should have still been allotted that time. But because there was no cameras and no proof of any of these things, everybody got away with whatever they wanted. Now, my story about what they were talking about is, how I feel right now is, what are we doing about the children out there? I mean, I didn't hear any one word today about the kids. Is there families out there on the hills right now with their kids? And if there is, why aren't they in a hotel? And if those, you know, my second thought about the hotels being so expensive is, you know, we're all having problems right now with inflation and how there's not enough money being spent and businesses are closing down. So the way I think is maybe the judge should go around to some of these hotels that aren't really making that money and just say to them, hey, you know, how about you take a smaller amount from us for these nights, but you'll still get, you know, like she said, it's $2,200 a month. Well, maybe we can rearrange something to where, because a lot of these people, some of them are on Social Security, some don't have any income, whatever. Long story short, we could be making an agreement with those hotels just to be a smaller amount just for that reason, just for those nights, for those people. And the thing about the cameras is when you're operating these places, you know, it's one thing to say somebody like, you know, is going to be full charge. Well, how do you do that when there's a lot of people and maybe there's going to be people in there and they're sneaky, they're this, they're that, they're that? Well, if you have a camera, especially on families with children, then you don't have to guess. You know, you can watch that camera for a few days and, you know, because we would have somebody monitoring them like me. I just finally started feeling safer in my house after getting the ADT Plus. Sorry. It's a camera that you pay for each month, $34 a month, and it monitors your home. But these people could be doing the same thing, because you'd have to pay for somebody to take control of them, right? So you have to pay for somebody to work. But if us as a town would say that we have cameras, and these people would have to just sign the thing, saying, you know, okay, I'm going to stay here willing to let you watch me on camera, then here you have cameras on these people.
Okay, I need to wrap up. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Do we need to do the action?
Pardon?
Do we need to make the
action? No, you pulled it, so now it's back to the board for action.
Could I suggest one more thing?
Sure.
To Sarah, perhaps to clarify some confusion in my mind and maybe others, because I don't attend all your meetings. I know that's Nancy's committee assignment. I'd like to see an agenda item in the near future where you can present to us how all these programs fit together. Because quite frankly, I'm having a difficult time with the piecemeal approach and know how it fits together toward a resolution of the issue.
We share your challenge. The way housing funding works, it's very challenging, but we are happy to bring that back to the board.
Thank you.
What's the board's desire?
Motion to approve.
I have a motion to approve.
Second.
And a second.
That's the recommended motion, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Supervisor Howell?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Crist?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 5F, Sheriff. Are you here for that, or am I catching you off guard?
No, we have two items, and I was...
So, my question is, what is this for? I understand that we gave you the position of a PIO, and I'm trying to balance between that and what this is, if they go together, or if one needs to be eliminated, because you already have it filled.
Oh, yeah, great question. So... Cultural Media is a transparency engagement corporation.
Hold on.
Sheriff, if you would, just for the recording, your name
is
record
online. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Give her a sticker afterwards.
Yes, Sheriff Jeremiah LaRue.
Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy. So they offer monthly training to staff, and when there are critical incidents, we submit things to them for review, and then they help articulate things for us. So it's basically a third party that's we're able to vet things through to ensure that we're staying with the current best practices, but then also within the legal scope of things. It just helps us have a clear message. Supplements our current staff member.
Can they be combined? Shouldn't the PIO have that capability as well? I'm not sure. I just don't want to have something duplicate issue. Just because we can?
Well, I understand that. I guess I could... It's kind of similar. I guess I know the county uses outside assistance for legal matters or mm-hmm. personnel matters.
But I think that's available to your department as well. Correct? Mm-hmm. Ms. Davis?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, for media purposes, it's just they're a renowned firm that handles these matters. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we use them. So I recommend that we maintain that relationship.
Okay. Anything further from anyone else?
No, is it fair to say that this firm is an information firm that tailors its work toward law enforcement?
That's correct. So they have different contracts all around the United States, and they specialize in law enforcement communication. And... So that's why we're contracting with them. And they've helped so many different agencies. They've helped us with some very significant cases.
Okay. Bring it back to the board.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Okay. Supervisor Howell?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Crist?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsev.
I'm going to be a no, and I think that we need to take a look at what we're using there. I get the aspect of why, but I think that we may already have something in-house that may be better available to save, a $30,000 cab that might help enhance something else. I'm not sure of what that is, but I'm open to that dialogue. So,
okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. We are at, Wendy, you okay?
What are we going into next?
6A. I'm
going to take 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It might.
I'll wait for Wendy to say it. You're going to take 5.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes.